In the evening, partly cloudy overnight, dropping down to about 25, gusty wind. For tomorrow, mostly sunny and 44. Sunday, some more rain and snow showers possible, high around 44. I'm WSBS staff meteorologist Steve Hamilton.
It's time for Let's Talk on your hometown station, 860 AM and 94.1 FM, WSBS and WSBS.com.
Good morning, everybody. This is Smitty. That means it's Friday. It's a fall day in the Berkshires, but we had to come to expect that. Maybe some snow flurries in the air this weekend. But nonetheless, it's always great to be back home. But we got a great show today, very timely show. There's an article in the local newspaper today, and we've been working very hard on this thing for several years, far too many years in some people's minds, including my guest. But Monica Webb is here from Wired West, and we're talking broadband. Monica, thanks for joining us today.
Very happy to be here.
Well, good to have you here. I know you've been working very hard on this. You've been crisscrossing all over Western Massachusetts, and you had a very late night last night at a meeting. But give us some updates about the broadband. I always tell people I was with the governor in 2008 when we were in Beckett that he was going to light up those unserved communities of Massachusetts, of which most of them were in Western Massachusetts, by 2011. I was with the governor in 2012 when in Sandusfield when they started actually hanging fiber optic cable on the poles. Here we are at the end of 2014 and there's still unserved communities. What's going on? Where are we? What's the update?
Well, I live in Monterey, and I recognize that some of the listeners in Great Barrington may not understand exactly what kind of liability we're dealing with. Slow access, inability to use everyday modern applications like Netflix for residences and business applications. I had to take my town ethics test required by the state, and it's all done by video, and it took me over 3 hours because you have to download the video segment, so it was buffering, and then watching it. So it's trying to connect with the modern world as a residential customer. It's businesses. It affects business growth and productivity of home businesses, and it affects institutional being able to connect to institutional requirements from the government's perspective. So it's not just an inconvenience. It really is something that is, in this day and age, critical infrastructure, and we need to solve this issue. The good news is we're most of the way there. I know it's been a lot of years, and I'm as impatient as anybody to get this to actually be solved. Wired West was formed a few years ago, and it's a municipal cooperative, 44 towns in Western Massachusetts that are unserved or underserved by high-speed internet, and we're there to be the local solution to the problem. We're there to actually operate a network in these towns, a regional network in these towns.
Well, let me ask you, though. Not every community is a member of Wired West.
Right.
What are the advantages of being a member of Wired West? And you say you're the local solution. Why is not the MBI the local solution? They did the middle mile. Why aren't we just finishing this darn thing?
The success of this kind of network really requires local participation. It really requires local engagement and local loyalty. I mean, we've spent years being disenfranchised by the incumbent providers who haven't wanted to serve our communities. This is a way to do it. Additionally, there's a financial piece there. It's not attractive enough for the private providers to serve our communities. We just don't have dense enough population. The costs of building the network are too high. The revenue prospects are too low. When you do it as a municipal entity, which we're talking about doing, which would be different from what the state could do, different what private providers could do, we can borrow the capital to build the system at a lower rate than the private sector could borrow capital, and we can pay it back over a longer period of time. We can do a 20 or plus year bond to pay this back. Additionally, we don't have to pay profits to owners or shareholders. So suddenly what is not feasible for the private sector telecommunications to undertake is now feasible from a municipal perspective. So that's one of the important reasons that you want this done on a municipal level. And there are over 150 of these municipal fiber optic networks throughout the country that are successfully providing affordable, high-capacity, reliable service to their citizens and businesses. And and the consumers are very, very happy with the service they're getting.
We're talking broadband and last mile solutions with Monica Webb from Wired West, and this is so timely. We really got to keep the pedal to the metal, so to speak. And I know Monica's really been the lead weight on that pedal, keeping it moving. When you talk about local participation from communities, does that mean financial, or if that's the case, why couldn't just whatever town, Berkshire County, just say, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Why do I need Wired West or MBI? Why can't I just go ahead and do it? What are the advantages of doing it on a cooperative basis?
Certainly, if every citizen wanted to undertake this and not receive any additional benefits from a regional network or from the state, they are welcome to do that. Here are the advantages of doing it the way that that Wired West and the Mass Broadband Institute have structured this particular project. On a regional basis, it means that there are significant economies of scale. You know, if a small town does this, say they have 400 households, it's a very different prospect when you go out to bid for construction, when you operate the network, how many subscribers are supporting a very complex network. We're talking about a regional proposal where we have up to 28,000 households as part of that. So we have better bids from construction. We have better rates for the equipment that we have to use both within the network and at each house. We also have better rates for data. And, you know, when you and I get on the internet, we are either sending information out or we're downloading information from the internet. And that data has to get to the actual internet backbone. The internet hub in Massachusetts is Boston. So it typically goes via Springfield, goes Springfield and Boston. So we have to pay. Your internet service provider has to pay for your data to get out to the internet and back. So when a town does this on its own, it has to pay for all the town's data to go to the internet and back, and they sell it in set increments. So I'm going to use an analogy of a transport truck. So each town would have to buy a transport truck of data, whether it's full or not, to get to Boston. When we have 30 or 40 towns aggregated, we can actually take only buy the trucks we need. So maybe 40 towns only need 8 trucks. So it's cheaper for us to pay to get our data to and from the internet as well. So there are significant economies of scale, but overall, this kind of network has operational complexities, operational costs. It's a much lower risk for each town that participates if it's in a regional basis, because those costs are spread over a much greater subscriber and revenue base.
Now, this is a very complex issue, and one thing you've been all over the place dealing with this. We were at a meeting in Monterey just last week, and one of the people in the room just said, just give me the darn thing. You know, the complexities of broadband and, you know, bandwidth, I don't want to get bogged down in that, the technology of it all, but some people say, just give it to me. Why has this been such a hard road to toe? A lot of money's gone into it. We've done a lot of state money. There's been a lot of federal money, but yet we're still not there. I agree with you 100%, and it's frustrating that, you know, the Verizons and the Time Warners of the world aren't stepping up to the plate to serve any of us out here. But what's going to get it over the hump? To answer that gentleman's question is, I just want it. What's it going to take?
Right. So there are 45 towns that are unserved, that don't have adequate broadband access. The total cost to build a fiber optic network, which, you know, by every evaluation that's been done, is the most responsible, reliable, highest capacity, future-proof, you know, responsible use of taxpayer dollars that can be done in terms of a technology, in terms of a network. The total cost for 44 towns is in the neighborhood of $100 to $120 million. Now, the state is pledging $40 million towards that. So there's a major financing gap, and the towns need to bridge that gap. And that's what we are working on right now, is a financing plan and a strategy that enables the towns to bridge the financing gap, to have local oversight over operation of the network, and also has the least impact on their tax base. One of the things when Wired West started was we wanted to create a network that was financially sustainable, not just where the revenues would pay for the operations and pay for the maintenance of the system and system upgrades, but also would pay for much or all of the debt service. So this is, in effect, the ideal public project, because we're structuring it in a way that it will, for the most part, pay for itself, including the cost of capital. Now, there are some technical, the first 3 years when we're under construction, we're not bringing in revenue. So towns will need to appropriate for those first 3 years, which we've structured to be interest only on the money borrowed. But the point is that, you know, towns can do this. Towns can secure their long-term viability. They can increase the opportunities for education, for professional, for professionals, for economic development, for health care of seniors that want home-based health care. And they can do this in a way where it almost completely pays for itself.
So the aggregate of the final mile, the last mile, is cost A. Little town, Berkshire County, what's their share of it? Is that what's being worked out right now? What's the timeline going forward? Here we are, November, whatever it is today. But moving forward, we're already, like I always say, we're already into the second decade of the 2000s, where Bill Gates said this would be the decade of velocity because it's changing so much. Well, we missed the first decade of the 2000s. Let's not miss the second. But what's the timeline going forward, and what is my share at the local level? Just so people have an understanding, you know, we have, when you look at the this the last election, this last couple of days, I mean, a school vote was turned down here. There's certain cost concerns that folks have, and now you're going to ask some of these communities to step up to the plate to help pay for that last mile broadband. Long question to probably what's going to be a short answer, but we all have cell phones. Why wouldn't we just do wireless? I know some towns have tried wireless, but talk to the folks about the broadband capacities and capacity building and why that's so important, not only to your household, but to maybe a business as well.
So first I'll tackle how much does each town pay. You know, there's clearly a cost to build this network in each town. So the best cost drivers we can find are the number of fibered miles. So the number of miles that the wire is on the pole in your town, and the number of residences, because there has to be a connection to each residence. So the cost drivers for each town, what each town will be responsible for, will be primarily driven by fiber miles and number of residences. Secondly, timeline. For, you know, it's a complex process. This has to go to town meeting. The towns have to have accurate numbers. So there's we're in the process of getting an engineering firm on board to do detailed engineering. We already have high-level engineering, high-level cost estimates. We need more detailed information for towns to go to town meetings. So that's being done. Then we'll have to go to town meetings. Then we have to actually issue the bonds and then bring construction on board. It's to do, if all 44 towns participated, it's a 2 to 4 year timeline depending on when your town is built out. So that sounds long. I don't know that all 44 towns are going to participate, in which case the timeline will be compressed. Those are the caveats I can give you on the timeline right now. In terms of wireless, this is a question I get all the time because people think, hey, isn't the future without wires? Mm. Here's this thing, is wireless, you can only send so much data through the air. There are fundamental physical restrictions of wireless that mean that it will not be the backbone of our future telecommunications network. Today, worldwide telecommunications are built on fiber optic networks. Your cell towers, all these cellular networks are fiber to the tower. The only part that's wireless is between the tower and your phone so that they can handle all that data. There is the MBI, when they built their middle mile network to the community anchor institutions, that was fiber optic. And there's a company you may have heard of called Google that is betting on that being the infrastructure of the future to homes and businesses in targeted buildouts that they're doing in urban areas. So, and I'm not saying that you have to have wires within your home. I'm talking about having a big data pipe. Just think of it like having a big water pipe, high voltage electric, right into your home, and then you can broadcast wirelessly from there. There have been towns that have tried wireless broadband, and the issue has been coverage. We have, with our hills and valleys and our heavy tree coverage, which wireless signals for broadband have difficulty, if not impossibility, penetrating. So there's a huge coverage problem when they put up these towers. I mean, we'd have to have towers on every hill and ridgeline. There are issues with reliability. You know, lightning can take out the wireless broadband towers, and people have been without service for days or weeks. There is the long-term cost of the system. You have to replace all the components of the system every 7 years. So it's like rebuilding. You know, some people say, oh, it's cheaper to do wireless. Over the long term, it's not. It's more expensive than fiber optic. And the biggest issue is capacity. It just has much, you know, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. The analogy I like to use is, if I was standing at the top of a grassy hill with two pails of water and I poured one down a pipe and I poured one directly down the grassy hill, fiber is like pouring it down the pipe. the water or the data travels a lot faster, and you have a lot more at the end. If you pour it directly down the hill like wireless, it's subject to interference from the grass blades. It gets absorbed by the ground. You end up with a lot less water, and it travels a lot more slowly. And that's the same thing when you look at the analogy of fiber optic as your telecommunication system versus wireless.
Now, when you mentioned about the engineering, that's ongoing. We're paying for that. The towns aren't expected to pay for any engineering. So the state's going to do the MBI and hopefully working with Wired West, because in my opinion, the Wired West really is the local voice, the local hands-on people to deal with the MBI. But the engineering is going to be done by then. So then pick a town in Monterey where you live. Monterey would then know what the engineering is going to entail and maybe what the costs are going to be from there. Is that
absolutely
fair to say?
Absolutely. The engineering, the detailed engineering will drive the precise costs for each town. You know, where the equipment's going to be located, how all of the lines are going to interconnect in Monterey and then within our neighboring towns. So that really is going to drive the local cost. And then, you know, our town select board needs to decide if we want to put it on the town warrant. And there has to be significant education of all of our residents and businesses as to what this means for the town in terms of cost and in terms of securing the viability of our town's future. You probably recall BRPC had a report out in the last year about how our overall population is projected to continue to decrease and age. And this, you know, other areas in the country have been faced with this. And Lafayette, Louisiana had a similar situation. They built a fiber network. And that is what retained recent college graduates. That's what attracted entrepreneurs. It's what attracted young families and professionals to want to live there. So this is really something that is critical to the future of our small towns and our overall region in terms of attracting more people to live here and retaining more people to live here.
Monica Webb from Wired West, and we're talking last mile broadband. She must have been looking at my notes, because the big question, which a lot of people don't think about, but I know you and I do, and I think a lot of folks do, but when it comes to broadband, just give it to me. I don't care what it takes. But economic development. You touched on that a little bit. You know, when you look at the Berkshires, you know, when I was a kid, people have heard me say this a million times, 12,000 people worked at General Electric in Pittsfield, and there was 3,000 people working at Sprague Electric in Arthur Adams, and 4,000 people worked at the paper mills just in Lee alone, you know, the rising mill here in Great Barrington. But it's a new economy. I always talk about Iredell Cosmetics, a $50 million global company based here in Great Barrington. They need fiber optic as well. What is the economic development aspect of not only big businesses like Iredell, but maybe a small business? Or what's the educational component for our kids in the school? The schools are well equipped, but then if they go home and live in Monterey or Sandusfield, they're pretty much isolated from the outside world until school starts again the next day. So what are the economic development opportunities if we make this investment and have it built for the long run?
So site selection specialists, and they're typically hired by medium and large size companies to determine where to locate. So maybe they want to expand, maybe they want to move operations. Access to a fiber optic network is one of their top criteria for locations. It's a non-starter unless you have access to fiber optic in your region. For home businesses, we have the highest number per capita of home businesses in the state here in Western Massachusetts. We've got a great quality of life. People will, you know, want, they, a lot of people live here because they want to be able to operate out of their home. Having access to fiber optic means that those home businesses will be able to compete with any business in the state, any business in the country, or around the world in terms of access to customers, in terms of access to modern applications that help their productivity. So it's really important for that component. We did a market research survey 2 years ago now, and we asked people, if you had better, more reliable, higher capacity internet, would you operate a home business? And over 50% of people said yes. Someone either telecommute for my existing job, or I would operate a home business. So those are major numbers in keeping people here, as opposed to having to commute to other areas, as opposed to only living here on weekends. So it really is going to be an important driver of local economic development here in our towns.
Now, we had a very well-attended meeting in Monterey last week, and I think isn't there one coming up in Beckett soon?
There is. So we've been doing in concert with the Massachusetts Broadband Institute and the Franklin Regional Council of Governments community outreach meetings, and they're for select boards and finance committees You know, we typically have capacity for interested citizens as well. But we're talking about what this, you know, what work has been done and what this is going to entail in terms of town participation going forward, what the timeline is, all of the very critical high-level details at this point. And we are asking towns that are interested for their select boards to sign a non-binding resolution saying that they want to participate. And that way they'll be included in the detailed engineering that the state is doing. We do have town. We do have two more meetings. We've had three thus far around Western Massachusetts. We have two more meetings, one in Beckett, one in Worthington. So Beckett is Tuesday the 18th at Town Hall. Worthington, also at Town Hall, is Wednesday the 19th, and both meetings are at 6 p.m.
Now, are you looking for select board members to show up, or just citizens raising a concern, raising the awareness of this? Or
we are very much looking for select boards and finance committees to come to this, because we need them to be on board before we can take this to all of our citizenry. Now, most of the citizens know what's going on. We did a pledge campaign across our region. We actually got 13,000 households pledging to take service. So citizens are aware this is going on. They're interested in it. But at this point, we really are focusing these meetings, because they're regional meetings. So we'll draw, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 towns. We're asking for select boards and finance committees, and certainly broadband committees. Some of these towns have broadband committees, technology committees, and interested citizens, as I said, are also welcome. It is subject to capacity, and there is an RSVP system that we're using. So if you are interested in coming, if you could please email me info@wiredwest.net and let me know that you're interested in coming. And on that note, you know, if you want more information, go to our website, which is wiredwest.net.
Now, I've got to ask you political questions.
Go right ahead.
Governor Patrick and his administration have been very committed to this thing for several years. The elections were a couple of days ago. We're going to have a new governor starting in January. Any feeling about the sentiment of this new governor? Has this been a topic on the campaign trail about broadband in Western Massachusetts? I don't recall it getting big headlines in the last gubernatorial race, but is there any concerns from Wired West or MBI about what the next administration may be looking at?
Well, my understanding is it has come up on the campaign trail. Now, of course, all of those debates that were broadcast on Massachusetts stations, I can't get at my home because I'm getting television out of Albany. I have satellite. But I do understand that the topic of broadband did come up. I mean, you know, it's particularly sensitive, clearly, in Western Massachusetts, and that the candidates seemed largely in support. We haven't spoken to Charlie Baker's administration specifically about this. What we're hearing is, because the towns are talking about stepping up to the plate for the majority of the money, that the state will be much more likely to participate regardless of the partisan politics of any administration.
So we still have some work to do. People have to circle the wagons, but we've never been this close. The last mile is what's going to get to your home and your business. There's been a lot of talk about the middle mile, and I think, unfortunately, some businesses and individuals have seen the trucks out there with the middle mile and saying, it's right in front of my business. Why can't I get broadband connection? Why is that? It's right there. I can look at the pole out my office window, but yet they won't make a drop into my business. What's that difference between the middle mile and the last mile, other than the obvious?
So the middle mile is, you know, that's sort of long. It's long-haul fiber capacity. It's sort of like a high-voltage power line. May go by your house. You can't just, hook onto it to get electricity. So it's the same thing where we need to connect into the middle mile at central points, you know, i.e. town centers, and from there build distribution networks where fibers go out to all the various homes and businesses from there. So we need to build distribution hubs that connect in central places to the middle mile and get that backhaul only from central places. Because, you know, maybe that middle mile that goes along, I'll use Route 23 in Monterey. So maybe there are 40 fibers or around that number in that. There are more than 40 homes. Mm-hmm. So I start, you know, splicing off the various fibers, and suddenly I'm out of fibers. So that's one of the reasons we need to create distribution points and then have fibers going out from those distribution points. One thing that I think is really important for towns to understand is we need support from the citizenry at these town meetings. This is really important. If you want this in your town, make sure your select board knows. Make sure your neighbors know. We're going to be doing a pre-subscription campaign in January, starting in January. Each town will need to show a minimum of 40% of households interested in subscribing before we're recommending this go to town meeting. So we're going to need people to say, yes, I absolutely want service that's 1,000 times better than anything else that's offered out there at a competitive price.
Is the 40% the floor to be able to break even with this thing? I mean, it's not going to be a profitable venture, but do we need that just to cover the costs?
40% is an adequate starting point. At 50%, 51% subscription, we are, you know, we're then covering our costs. One thing I will say is when these kinds of networks are built in unserved communities where there is literally no competition, no reasonable competition, there's, you know, substandard DSL or wireless, we're seeing really high take rates, 65 to, in some cases, 95% of people interested in taking the service. So we're confident that we will reach those higher take rates, you know, as the service starts to come online, and we're looking to start at 40%.
All right. Well, we're out of time. We're out of time, unfortunately. Monica Webb, she's done a fantastic job, folks, and I tell you, we are very fortunate to have her being such a champion for this last mile broadband. So thank you to you and for being here today and the good work that Wired West is doing. We'll have to get you back probably in January when things are really starting to get moving here with the surveys and the engineering. So I look forward to having you come back.
Thank you, Smitty, and I also want to say thank you very much for your support for solving this. I know that you've been at the State House and with the Mass Broadband Institute making sure that things are actually moving forward, so thank you.
Well, we appreciate it very much. I enjoy working with you. Kind of a recap of the elections, I just wanted to thank everybody. I was blessed to run unopposed this year, but the response, even in this campaign, was very, very humbling and appreciative. Next week is Veterans Day, so please take some time to pay homage to the veterans who not only are living, but the ones who are still serving and the ones who paid the ultimate sacrifice. And on a sad note, we all have followed the story of Trinity Reifstanger, who fought a very public battle with a horrible disease, a beautiful young lady, a wonderful wife, wonderful mother, taken way too young. And I know the services will be tomorrow with a wake today. And on the opposite side of it, my good friend Jean DeLea's mom passed away at 103. God bless her. We should all be so fortunate. I told Jean last night when I spoke to him that it must have been the good pasta when she was growing up. But God bless her and all of those folks. But Jesse, thanks for pushing all the right buttons, keeping us on the air. And we'll be back next week with another great show. Until then, be well, be safe, and have fun.
Oh boy!